hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads where bandits are. Catacombs and giant doors protect the chest that stores some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's a grand theft of Elder Scrolls, Simon's Quest with Toe and Earl, rocket shoes to Everclue, Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash a crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is a dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. We're over on Spotify as well, so give us some spins and we can stack those fractions of a penny. And, well, we don't get paid, but you can go to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where you put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. We're also over at Blue Sky, and the handle escapes me at the moment. So
it's
I'll
like
let
weird,
you know what
like
it is.
The, yeah, it's like so long. Like, I don't know how people condense that shit.
Well, I think people know, like, all the additional Blue Sky stuff that goes after it. So we just got to kind of tell them the name, which is Control Issues Pod. So
Then you figure out the rest of it.
Yeah, that's so.
We have bluesky.fm.ioc.com.
Trying to make shit work.com.
Yeah.
Let's see, I did Twitch. Send us an email, a note, some good tidings, some well wishes, some trolling.
Questions? Some questions, maybe?
Ooh, especially questions, impressions, thoughts, feelings,
whatever's
on your mind.
We do a mailbag.
Yeah. It's usually empty, but, you know, we like to get something in there. We want to read your stuff. We want to interact with the community. So feel free to drop us a line, controlissuespod@gmail.com. I think that's about it, AMC. So how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. Definitely a better week than last week. I'm starting to think this is just what it's like to get to this age where you're just living your life and things just get bad and things get good. Things get bad. You kind of just ebbs and flows, and you're now used to it at this point where you just kind of just live through like the craziest things. But yeah, like, you know, we had the fires and all that stuff. What I was saying, the kids had lice like the other week, like it was just chaos. And then this week,
oh yeah,
now, here we are. We're now getting rain. The kids are lice free. And I'm back to just living my life again. It's weird just how things can just be the end of the world and then back to somewhat normalcy is what I'll say. And you just get used to that, I guess, as you're living life. Like, just shit happens and then you keep it moving. I always think about that online too, like just online when things are, you know, the biggest stories through, like, you know, social media and whatnot, and then within a few hours, within a day, we just move on. It's like, oh yeah, TikTok was gone and now it's just back.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a thing happened and then now we've moved on with our lives. So yeah, that's what I felt like this week has been. Like, it's nice. We're getting rain now. It's awesome, actually. It's been so long since we've had rain. I can't remember the last time we got it. And especially just dealing with what we just dealt with. And there are all types of, like, you know, with the coverage of like reading about the rain, you're just reading about like all the potential issues that could present itself because of the fires and now with the rain. But I think overall people are just like, hell, we just needed water. And so ultimately, even if we do get like a bunch of other issues that come along with the rain, we're taking the rain over anything else. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm in a positive mood right now. How about yourself, A-Dub? How's life been?
You know, pretty cool. Like you said, ups and downs. My supervisor slash friend that, you know, I was working with back in my old job for a number of years. And then she left that job, but then poached me to come with her. And then we were working at the current place. for about 3 years, and then she sprung it on us that she took a position at another job working with another old boss of ours. Like we have a real tight-knit group in our accounting family, and we just somehow always find our ways back to each other. We always stay in touch. So she's embarking on that next step of her journey. I got to meet my new supervisor, and she seems pretty cool. So hopefully things just keep going smoothly. I can keep stacking my chips and going in and out of work without much hassle. Something I didn't get to talk about over the past couple of months because I just kept forgetting was that I watched all of the Secret Level episodes, and I want to get this out the way because I need to do this. But yeah, man, first of all, they were fantastically done. However, most of the episodes don't really give you what you came for when it comes to the properties that they're representing. Like the Warhammer episode was by far the best. Concord episode was very good. It was way better than anything else I saw from Concord, unfortunately. But if they want to turn that into like a show or a movie, I think they'd have some success there.
But the
And
characters in Concord were bad, though, so how's it
no,
good?
no, no. I guess I'm just immune to that.
Was it were the designs were you critical of the designs as as you're watching
Just sitting there,
the show?
but
If you get it.
and then another one that stood out was the Mega Man. Well, the Mega Man episode was fantastic. However, it didn't really give you Mega Man. It gave you the origin of Mega Man, but then right when things start getting good, it's over. And I was just like, what the hell? Like, what are we doing here? You know what the people want. Keanu Reeves in the Armored Core episode, that was outstanding. I mean, I'm an Armored Core fanboy, so they did a good job with it. It was awesome. I used to be on a message board where we were making like Armored Core fan fiction. So seeing that episode kind of brought back those memories, and they did an excellent job, man. I hope we see more Armored Core stuff like that at some point in the future. However, the episodes outside of that didn't really do it for me. And I hate to say that, but gotta be honest. And I'm looking forward to season two. Hopefully they come back and revisit some of the properties that they were dealing with and go a little deeper into them. It's definitely worth a watch, especially if you're a gamer, if you love Death and Robots. That same flair and panache is there. So I highly recommend going to check out Secret Level just to see it for yourself, form your own opinion, and take the good stuff. Let us know what you didn't like, let us know what you did like. I also watched that new Jamie Foxx, Cameron Diaz movie that's on Netflix, Back in Action. And I love both of them, but the movie was pretty damn good, I gotta say. The thing that stood out most to me in that movie, though, was that they made Cameron Diaz into just the biggest badass I've ever seen in my life. Like, the action sequences were awesome. Jamie and Cameron Diaz performed beautifully in all the action sequences. They were all like excellently choreographed and well planned, but just the moves and the maneuvers that Cameron Diaz was pulling off, it was like watching Black Widow in Civil War. I was like, holy shit, this is incredible. My girl still got it. She needs to get like a Charlie's Angels solo film. But yeah, man, that's about it for like the content and things I've been watching. Of course, watching a lot of anime, getting into the second season of Tower of God, the second season of Solo Leveling is going, and that is just outstanding. But then, like, we had the fires and everything. Luckily, it's been raining ever since last night, so hopefully that's helping to quench some of the remaining flames out there. We had a little situation overnight where some random guy vandalized one of the cars in our parking lot. So I'm trying to help my neighbors navigate that situation, hopefully find this guy and get him off the streets before he does the same thing to anybody else. And just with all the other craziness going on, it's just another another straw on the camel's back, just trying to crush us. But we're staying strong. We're standing tall. It's not going to put us down, and we're just going to keep doing what we do. You know what I'm saying?
Well, how that gaming going, A Dub?
Oh, you know how that gaming going.
How that game
So,
going?
you know how that gaming go. Yeah, a lot of Diablo. That season 7 is out, and it is kicking a lot of ass, I gotta say. If you go into those headhunt areas and you do the whispers, you're doing the root rot and all that, you will be showered in legendaries nonstop. Like, to the point where I'm back and forth to town every 5 minutes, just trying to offload stuff. When I was leveling my character, I was just like, you know what? There's not even a point of examining the loot and trying to look for these incremental upgrades as I'm leveling up. I'm gonna just keep pushing to max level so that I can at least have max level gear. And it's like, all right, I have this. I should be set. If I find something different, if I find something with a greater affix, then I can swap it then. You know, I'm running a druid doing that werewolf build, and I got some pretty solid uniques, got a handful of mythics already, and I'm doing tremendous amounts of damage without really dipping into the power that I could really extract from it. Like, I was on Torment 3 having a blast, and I didn't even have my final Paragon board. Like, I'm still filling in nodes. My glyphs were like level 15. I didn't have any gems socketed. It was just like, I did my best to get as far as I could without doing too much with my gear and my build, so that as I encounter problems, then I have that blank canvas where I can slot in something, or I can pick something more thoughtfully that's actually going to amplify what I'm doing instead of just adding to it. So, having a blast with that. I finished the battle pass this morning. I'm in the second to last chapter of the season journey. I'm getting that bird companion. I'm so excited for that. I mean, I love the dog. I love the little kittens, but I want to get that bird. One of my favorite things about Diablo 3 were the pets. They had a wide variety of them, like a walking hand, or like a half dead dog chewing on a hand, all kind of, a teddy bear with a knife. It was good stuff. So I'm glad that Diablo 4 is taking the steps to fill in those similar spaces that Diablo 3 did so well. What else did I do? I mean, of course, still poking at Cyberpunk, still poking at Gran Turismo, still getting on Overwatch from time to time, and shutting up these dudes who get on the chat too early trying to talk shit. And it's like, okay, homeboy, let me switch to a character that I normally play and let's see where you're really at. Of course, taking home the victory, carrying high stats, talking shit to my brother, me and him going elimination for elimination. Like, oh, we got the same eliminations, but you got more deaths than me, so I was the one carried. It's a good time. I love that so much. And yeah, man, ever since I got the pro, I'm kind of looking at my game collection and just, revisiting different things, see if they look any better, see if they play any better. I also made the decision that I'm going to get back to trying to finish Doom 2016. I also purchased Doom Eternal, so I'm gonna push through that as well. And yeah, man, just preparing for the upcoming games and just having a blast, man. It's just such a good time to be a gamer, digging through my backlog and enjoying everything that this industry continues to give me. But AMC, what have you been playing?
Played a couple of games. Didn't get a ton of gaming in this week. Just kids and stuff at night. Usually that's if I get a game in, it'll be usually around when they're going to bed because Marissa and I will trade off on who puts the kids to bed. And so whoever gets that duty, the other one can do whatever they want. When I get my free time, it's usually gaming, but I didn't get to get much in most of the week. So I only got the game on the weekend. So when it came to the weekend, it was two games I played, Stardew Valley. Pushing forward with that, just more of that. This is our second playthrough on a new farm. What's fun this time is Marissa's more interested in doing the mines this time around. And in the mines, that's where you do a lot of the combat and you're pushing through the levels of the mine. And the further you get down, you get more, you get rarer resources. And so that was something I focused on last time while she did a lot of the fishing and some of the stuff around the farm, but she wanted to try it out. So we've actually been doing the co-op thing in the mines, and that's been a lot of fun, just because one, we push through a lot faster, but then it'll be one person actually pickaxing trying to get minerals while the other person standing to their back with the sword fighting off enemies. So it's a lot better of an experience as opposed to doing it solo. So you got to kill everybody, and then when you kill them off, then you go and get the rocks and the minerals. So that's been cool. Also played some more Diablo 4. Started up this new season, doing first time ever doing the Spiritborn, and had my options. I thought about going Jaguar just so I can get my Black Panther itch scratched in Diablo, but I saw that gorilla and I wanted to the Glorilla. I saw the gorilla and I thought about giving it a try, and so I was like, you know what, I gotta do this, see what the gorilla's all about, and it is definitely fun. Like I'm enjoying the combat style as opposed to, the werebear, where it was a lot of heavy attacks, but you're in this werebear form, and so you have to either dash to the enemy or you can do your stampede towards the enemy. But with the Spiritborn, his basic attack is a teleport attack, basically. He'll just teleport to the enemy and get off his basic attack. And so I'm just zipping around the battlefield, but then I'm a gorilla, so zip to the guy, get my basic attack, and then I'm switching to the core skill. So now I'm slamming on the enemy with the gorilla hits. And then another ability I have is it's a push kick, but it pushes him back, but also knocks him down. So it adds just a little flair to the combat because I'm zipping to them, hit them, do the slam, push kick, knock them back. They knock over, fall down, get in their face, start slamming on them. And I got the ultimate like somewhat recently. So then I had the gorilla summon spirit come out there, and then he's doing his thing, slamming the battlefield in that havoc circle. And it's just a lot of devastation and really cool just animation, like to all the moves that the Spiritborn has in the gorilla form. So I'm really enjoying that. What I like about the gorilla form is that I'm holding on to my defense that I really enjoyed with the werebear. And they incorporate, it looks like, a lot of thorns into the gorilla build. And so that's something that I haven't really leaned into with the other characters. So that's gonna be kind of fun. I gotta start getting gear that has thorns added on top of that, so then I can get the bonuses to thorns really synergizing with my other attacks as I'm out in the battlefield. Because one of the things that the gorilla has is, so you have the thorns, but also I believe that when I take damage, I have one of my attacks is called like payback, I think. And with the one of the, I guess, bonuses on that, what happens is I'll use up all my vigor in an attack, but the bonus, so then I'll get damage on top of that when I use up all my vigor. But now also when I take damage, I build vigor. So the gorilla's style is all about kind of using that damage and turning it back on the enemy, which is really it reminds me of Bishop in X-Men, which is a really cool ability that he had. He would absorb the energy of other enemies' attacks and then basically send that back at them. And that's what the gorilla is centered around in his build style, at least what I'm seeing early on. And so I'm liking that kind of counter play that the gorilla has to offer as opposed to the usual more offensive style of other characters. So yeah, I can't wait to push forward with that, get some aspects going and get the runes. And once I get all that's where I really feel like I'll take off. But off to a great start with the Spiritborn and that gorilla style. Eventually I might try mixing in some of the other abilities, because I know they said that that was one of the things that they wanted to have is not in the optionality of the Spiritborn, is you could just switch between the different spirits if you prefer other styles of attacks. But right now I'm going heavy on the gorilla, and then we'll see from there once I really start getting like the uniques and all that other stuff that really kind of guides you in what you can really do with a build. But off to a great start with Diablo. That's all I got there. A-Dub, you think it's time? Should we get into these topics of the week?
Topics of
Topics of
the
the
week.
week. Man, this is an exciting week, Adele. We got
Yes,
back
it
to back
is.
weeks of news. We got some information about video games. So where would you like to lead us off?
You know where I'm going. We got to go to the big one, man. You know your
Yes.
boys at Microsoft, they spent all that money for a reason. And they've been cooking, they've been making deals, and they've got quite a selection of games coming this year on top of the things that we already knew about. I mean, we're already clear that we're getting Avowed in February. We're already clear that Outer Worlds 2 is coming sometime later this year. I'm guessing maybe in fall to kind of bookend the whole 2025 season. But we got some new stuff in the Xbox Developer Direct 2025, 5, 5, 5, 5. Yes. So yes, in this Xbox Direct, they're talking a bit more about the games we can expect in the first and second quarter this year, plus a couple little surprises mixed in there. So, you know, there's not a lot of titles to cover here, so we should be able to touch on everything. AMC, where would you like to begin?
Let's start with Expedition 33.
Yes.
So going into this, every year there's usually one game that I'll say I'm day oneing, no matter what. It was Diablo, what, 2 years ago, and then it was Muscle Hatred last year. It's this year it
You
was
clearly have a
Doom.
type.
Yeah, it was Doom for sure this year. And I was just, let's see what else that we have going on. And knowing that we got Expedition 33 coming out and we got a release date, it's going to be interesting because basically I have like a month to put that down before Doom. It looks like not even a month, maybe a couple weeks, but yeah. So we got to see some of that. I'm pulling this right from the Xbox Wire. The developer shared a deeper look at the game's innovative mechanics, such as the reactive turn-based system and the unique art direction that brings the game's world to life. We even got a first look at Expedition 33's expansive overworld map. As the coup de grâce, Sandfall Interactive confirmed the game's release date. Our journey to stop the Paintress begins April 24th. Fourth. Fourth. There was a lot more to that. They really got into the characters, some of their specialties. It felt like a decent deep dive into everything that you really needed to know about the game. And we saw this game first time it was revealed. The reaction was obviously super positive. Just a game that nobody expected. Final Fantasy was kind of the leading RPG when it came to, the visual presentation just being top notch, on comparison to, a lot of the PlayStation first party games as far as just the looks of the game and the realness. We hadn't seen that in many other JRPGs. Like you look at Persona, it's a very animated, cartoonish style of gameplay. Great presentation, but they lean into the more cartoonish style and or anime heavy style. And then Expedition 33 is revealed, and you see like the realism in the characters, but then it also has all the true turn-based, I guess, traditional mechanics that you prefer with also this, as they call it, reactive turn-based mechanics mixed in. And it kind of reminds me of the Mario games, but as you're playing it, there's somewhat a quick timiness to the reaction, which you're not just pushing attack and then you're watching the animation happen. You're carrying things out and then you're adding on top of that for extra damage. Or in the case of defense, I believe they say you can parry, you can defend, if you time it
Dodge.
right. Yeah, so there's very much a rhythmic timing slash like quick time mechanic to the combat that I think is gonna make it even more engaging. And they said when you hear them talk about it, the developers talk about their game, you can see that there's definitely a reverence towards JRPGs that they wanted to like ring true through this presentation, but then also have some of the updated mechanics that they would like to show to really build up the presentation and the, I guess, the cinematic feel to the combat. And it really shined here. I really liked what they showed within the characters. Like one of the characters that you can meet along the way, I always love this in other games, is this character literally becomes the enemies that you fight. You know, we've seen in other video games where you'll have a character that can learn the enemy's attacks. Well, this guy turns into the enemies, it looks like, at times when it's time to do the attacks, and that was absolutely awesome to see. There was you know, they showed the overworld map, and you get a character that you use to travel the overworld with, and it's pretty cool that they say you can upgrade. You can, I guess, if you find items to give to him, I think you're feeding him. If not, you're just giving to that character. Then that will unlock certain areas of the map, or just improve their ability to travel the open world, the overworld. It just looks absolutely beautiful as you're traveling in the overworld. Like, they had so much here that it's hard to get into all of it, but those are like the most notable things. And you know, just after watching this is a for sure day one. The problem is, will I be able to put it down in time for Doom, which is only a month later? We shall see how long this turn-based game is, but I have to get my hands on it, and there's nothing that's going to get in my way. What did you think about this you know, gameplay reveal, a dub of Expedition 33?
I mean, I was already just all in on this game when it was initially revealed because I know quality when I see it. However, this deep dive just further solidified my stance on this title. Like, I absolutely love their reverence for JRPGs. Like, you see a very Persona-esque style, like, menu system and overlays. It really makes the visuals pop and everything. The action is tense, frenetic, high energy, especially with those real-time elements layered on top of that. And then the developer went on to let people know that, hey, if you're more into turn-based, you could play the game turn-based and lean on your items and abilities more. However, if you're more into real-time, then they have those elements there for you as well, even to the extent that it's possible to do a no-hit run in this game, which I've never heard of for any RPG. So it's going to be very interesting to see how people play this game, how they manipulate it. And on top of that, they showed off like the different upgrade trees. They showed off the different passive skills that you can add. And it's like hundreds or dozens or hundreds of them per character. They're supposed to have like unique selections so that you can really choose which way you want to build them. You already touched on the visuals, which there's a realism to them, but it's over the top fantastical. It's like it's like Paris, but like on an acid trip. It's just gorgeous all around. I love when they showed off the person or the being that you use to fly around. They said they had the idea that they wanted to do that, like a balloon with Victorian pillows on it. And it looks just like that. It's very stylish while also looking very like rustic and aged and worn. And then, like, you mentioned it a couple of times, but I don't think people understand how serious this is. Expedition 33 is bringing back the overworld map to RPGs. And like, this overworld map is stunningly gorgeous, and it just looks like it pairs so perfectly with the rest of the game. I mean, you're gonna have a story, you're gonna be meeting people and things, you're gonna be making decisions. Like, it's, man, this is a very impressive offering from this French developer. I think this might be their first offering. So if this is their debut game, like they're really making a statement with it. I think Expedition 33 is definitely one of the games to watch for 2025. And it's going to be one of those rare games that me and you are more than likely going to be playing at the same time. So we'll be able to share our impressions, you know, note any differences and, you know, share tips and things that maybe you found that I didn't. I mean, I'm excited. I'm extremely excited for this. And knowing that it's coming April 24th this year, yeah, there's not long to wait. So I'm very much looking forward to Expedition 33.
You got next, A-Dub. What's the next game?
Next game, I gotta go to the big guy. You know what I gotta do there. We talk about Doom Dark Ages. Like, we already saw it was It was revealed. We saw that it looks stunning. They showed us bits of the gameplay and all that, but this deep dive goes deeper into the combat, the exploration, and the story. So, I mean, I'll talk a little bit about the combat and then I'll hand it off to you, but they detailed how much like versatility you're going to have between not only your guns, not only your melee weapons, but also with the shield. So I'll start there. The shield, I mean, that's an amazing addition to a first-person shooter where now you have an element of defense that isn't just like, oh, a personal energy shield or I'm using cover. It's like you have your cover. The shield, you can use it to block bullets. There are certain bullets that are a different color where if you get in front of them, you can deflect them back at the enemy, open them up for a finisher for even bigger damage. They have a new kind of finisher. I believe it was something like an epic finisher or something like that, where it gets the purple circle on them and you give them the boot and they fly apart. Speaking of, the gore is entirely over the top. Like, you're really gonna feel the power with these weapons because when you hit an enemy, an arm comes off, half a chest comes off, flesh is just coming off in chunks from their bodies and all that. But like, the shield is gonna be awesome, man. It's got the serrated edges on it that you can rev up, and it's like a saw shield. You can throw it at people, and it's spinning while it's in them. You can also use it to grapple to certain locations, so that's aiding you in the exploration. I told you about the deflection. I told you about the blocking, and then we get to the guns, and we're coming back to where everybody fell in love with the machine gun that uses skull fragments to take down enemies with its wide area of effect. So you're mowing down waves of enemies with this thing. I mean, they showed off the super shotgun, of course, which just does devastating damage. They showed off what looks like, the plasma rifle, or maybe it was it the BFG? I don't know. You're more of a Doom guy than me, so maybe you know about that. And it's they also have the melee weapons. Like, we're used to Doom. He's using his bare hands. He's pulling skulls off. Then we get to Doom Eternal. You got the laser sword and you're chopping enemies and cleaving them in twain. And now we've got like a mace, and I think we have one other melee weapon, but the mace is the one that looks most like a dub style. It's got the chain on it, very reminiscent of Brigitte from Overwatch. And you got a little reach on it, and just, oh man, the visuals, the broad expansiveness of the open world, the incredible volume of enemies that are on screen at any one time, the amount of ways you have to engage with and destroy them at your leisure. Other gameplay elements they showed off included actual gameplay settings where you can tweak the experience the exact way that you want it. You feel like the game is too slow, you could turn up the speed. You feel like the parry window's too tight, you could widen it, or you could shorten it if you want a bit more of a challenge. And there are numerous other options that you can click through to get the Doom experience that you really want instead of just, like dealing with whatever the developer wanted you to do. But man, I'm so excited for that. How did you feel about the breakdown of the weapons, the exploration, the gameplay options?
Let's take a quick break because we're right up against it, and I want to really get into this. So we'll take a quick break, and then I will give you my thoughts on Doom. Oh, so good.
Indeed.
All right, we are back, continuing with this Xbox Direct talking about Doom. Yeah, man, Doom: The Dark Ages. I'll lead off with the, and they did this on purpose. It was great to set this up. They gave the consumer, the gamer, a perspective of how to view the Doom the Dark Ages, and I'll take it straight from the IGN write-up. They basically compare Doom Eternal and Doom 2016 to feeling like you're in a fighter jet, whereas Doom the Dark Ages, the player stands and fights with the confidence of an iron tank. So
Yes.
I love that they decided to change up that feel of the combat. Like, it's still visceral, it's still gruesome, but now instead of being this super, I guess quick, I wouldn't say it's fast twitch, like kind of like Call of Duty, but it was definitely more Quake style, where you're running and from enemy to enemy, you're trying to take them down as fast as possible, and that's pretty much how you keep yourself alive. Because in a lot of those action, those animated, was it kill animations, that's
Yeah,
where
the
you'll get the
finishers.
drops. Yeah, you'll get the drops from those. And so yeah, you replenish yourself by jumping from enemy to enemy in that case. What I do like is they're leaning heavily on the fact that you do have the shield. So you're going to be one, the enemy's bullets aren't going to be as, at least some of their shots aren't going to be as fast. You can dodge them, you can block them, and you can repel them with the shield. So I like that they're finding a way to reinvent like what they're doing with Doom, but still giving you the same feel as far as the combat and the feel that you get from the combat.
I
And
like that you said that, and sorry to interrupt, because it just gave me the idea that it seems like they're making it closer to kind of a bullet hell.
yeah, very much. And you could see it too with some of the bullets, like they're very big and obvious, and they're moving at a pace that you can sidestep. So if you played any of those bullet hell style of games, those first person bullet hell style of games, you'll really know. There was like one that was, I believe, like a roguelike. I never played it, but I got off of PS Plus, and what's it called? Yeah, just seeing that, and then with the shield, knowing that like you're blocking the shield, but you're using it also offensively, it really gives this game a different feel, which I really like. Also, love that. I mean, they had already announced this, but like seeing it more, knowing that one, not only is a prequel, but as you see the enemy types, it does harken back to old school OG Doom with some of the enemy designs and the weapons that you get. You mentioned like, yeah, the plasma rifle, but what was cool is he had the plasma rifle and it was double barrel plasma rifle. You know,
Just
we're
pump
used to, yeah,
it.
we're used to the single barrel plasma rifle, but he has the two, and it's just rapid fire back and forth, just messing up the enemies, like just chewing them down. And you just have a ton of different weapon styles, but I do love that they're going back to OG Doom from an aesthetic viewpoint, and which gives me hope too, because you know what, the original Doom, it took place on Mars, I believe. I don't remember. But then you have the Doom 2016, where it's somewhat in the future, but you know, it doesn't feel like the Doom that you were playing on the PC. And so this is kind of, I think, bridging the gap between those two. And knowing that this is a prequel, we're going to learn a little bit more about the Doom Slayer, and hopefully lead into, maybe they'll get back into the OG Doom game. So it's almost like a way to reboot that original franchise from a modern perspective. So it is kind of fun what they're doing. They did say that this is also, since it's a prequel, it's a perfect jumping on point for people. So I can see them having visions for, you know, future Doom games moving forward from here. And I'm loving that, because it's we're not stopping. They're still coming up with new ideas and different ways to attack it. And yeah, this one just seems to pick up from a standpoint as just great gameplay, and will be probably like rated very highly. As I mentioned to you, what the first Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal were both nominated for Game of the Year at the Game Awards. This one looks like it's right in line with those two games from a gameplay standpoint. And I'm not sure if they've taken the notes, but it seems like, you know, there was some criticism of Doom Eternal, even though it was nominated. And with this one, they're going to focus more on the open world aspect of it, from how they described it. So it's going to be a bigger map with a ton to explore. That was something I really loved in Doom 2016. I think I was looking for like the little Doom guy, like figures
Yeah, I love those.
around the world.
Getting in a vent, like going underground, like, there you go.
Yeah,
Giving
and
that thumbs up or the fist bump.
exactly. And so I'm loving that you're gonna be like in this medieval hellscape, exploring on like doing the same exploration. So I think they kind of saw people really like the layout of Doom 1, and so they're trying to marry what they want to do with what people also seem to really resonate with in the first game. So they're bringing that aspect back to it. And And then on top of that, they just showed us a lot of like what we can expect from what we saw in earlier gameplay. Like they showed a little bit more of the gameplay as you're in the mech in the first person mode fighting against just other giant demons. So that's going to be its own aspect of the game. And obviously they showed the riding on the dragon and just lighting up like the side of like a, I don't know, like a ship or the
A
fuck it
living
was.
demon ship.
Yeah. Like it's gonna have all the scale that you love of say like a God of War style of game, but but with the first person goodness of a Doom game. And I'm just loving it because it's gonna be over the top, but it's gonna be in that Doom world. Like this is everything I need it to be, everything that I want it to be. And it's just gonna be interesting to see if I do get it day one, just because of Expedition 33 is a game that I can't pass up on. And so once we find out that game length, that's gonna really set up my year. But these will be two games that I will for sure be playing this year. And yeah, Doom, the Dark Ages is doing so many things right. And I have no doubt that this is going to be one of the best experiences that I'm gonna have this year and for a long time. And I am so looking forward to it. So yeah, Doom the Dark Ages, that I'm not gonna say it stole the show because there were so many great games here, but it definitely, from a first party standpoint, like if you got Game Pass, if you're an Xbox owner, if you're just ride or die with Microsoft, this is definitely one to look forward to. And knowing that it was on PlayStation, you can expect that it will be coming to PlayStation. So hopefully that, I'm assuming that's going to be day and date. So when that comes, I am playing the shit out of that game.
I mean,
Do you have any?
I already have it on my wish list on the PlayStation app, along with Expedition 33.
All
So
right.
it's set. Like, we're
Yeah.
going, man. And then, like, the developer just gave us so much detail. I mean, you were talking about the mech and the dragon, and they let us know that these aren't just like kind of gimmicky one-off things. Like, you're using that dragon. You're navigating the world. You're flying through. You're shooting stuff. There's mini bosses and things like that to take advantage of the gameplay that's associated with those things. You get in the mech. You're fist fighting with giant demons, walking through freeways, hitting them with finishers and things like that. So there's a lot going on there. I mean, they talked about the world itself, which is going to be this broad, expansive, gorgeously dark, gothic, medieval kind of world overrun with the minions of hell. And yeah, man, I mean, he just everywhere you look, there's either some like massive set piece or some broad vista, and it's just delightfully evil and demonic. It's just so much going on with this game. And despite the bigness of it and the grandness of the scale, it's still very tight and very focused. Like, with the exploration, you're going to be utilizing that shield to cover distance and, get to far off locations. It looks like there's even some swimming going on for you to be able to look around and find different kinds of secrets. There's all kinds of treasure that you can find that's going to upgrade your abilities. It's going to upgrade your weaponry and upgrade your mech. Hopefully. I don't know if they showed anything or said anything about upgrading the mech, so don't quote me on that. But they said that the world is going to be packed with tons of things for the player to find to enhance their ability to thwart the minions of hell. So it's not just all looks. It's not just scope for the sake of scope. Like, you're going to be exploring, you're going to be looking for stuff, and you're going to be slaying hellish demons every step of the way. So it looks like they're doing a crazy job there. They even went into detail about how they're attacking the story this time, whereas, you played Doom 2016. I've gotten a little taste of it that I'm going to go back and finish off, but a lot of the lore and the storytelling was through text files that you read, which was cool. You could stay in the action, you could take or leave the lore as you wanted it. But this time, they're putting the lore into the gameplay experience itself. You're going to be treated to cutscenes, you're going to be treated to NPCs who are informing you of what's going on and delivering the story through performance rather than just audio and text items. So it's going to be a bigger, better, more polished, more cinematic experience for us to look forward to. And if I'm not mistaken, Dune is going to be hitting on May 15th. So you got 3 weeks to work your way through Expedition 33. You think that's enough time for you?
No, that's definitely not enough time. And unless Expedition 33 is short, like I won't be able to play that day one.
You think you're going to be going to all the nooks and crannies looking for the hidden boss fights and all that? Like,
Yeah, I did it in the first two, so I will be doing it in this one for sure.
I'm in Expedition 33.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. That world looks so beautiful. I want to experience all of that world. That's why I said, like, it's I don't want to rush through Expedition 33, so it'll be interesting to see how long that game is because it's going to really set up then the rest of my year from there. But I mean, if I end up playing Doom later in the year, that means whatever's coming out later in the year is going to get pushed off. So hopefully, Expedition 33 won't be nearly as long as a Persona game or even like a Baldur's Gate style of game, a Larian game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also with you. I mean, you can quote me on this. I think were if GTA 6 somehow slips out of 2025, I think Doom Dark Ages might be one of the front runners for game of the year with ease. Like, it's the most impressive game that I've seen shown for this year so far, and that's saying a lot considering just the broad spectrum of games that we already know are coming this year, including what Obsidian is bringing to the table two times. So, yeah, man, Microsoft is setting up for a banner year this time. But AMC, what else we got in the Xbox Direct?
Yeah, let's get into this. There's one other thing. They also said that they're for Doom, they're doing away with the multiplayer so that they can focus more on the campaign. So that's gonna be interesting because I didn't play the multiplayer on either of them. I'm not sure how people like them, but I feel like that might be something that might be a welcome addition if like, you know, they pushed off the multiplayer to then build out this world even more. That's gonna add more to the campaign, which I think is just gonna be absolutely awesome. So I think that's a good move there for them. Yeah, the next one, let's get into South of Midnight. We got a release date, some more deep dive information. So this is from IGN. We happy few developer Compulsion Games not only showed off a new look at South of Midnight during the Xbox Developer Direct, but it also announced that it will be releasing April 8th, 2025. Man, May, April, Xbox just stacking it up. You're doing like Expedition 33, South of Midnight, Doom. I mean, they're putting out something to die, apparently,
If
Adub. Let's
you
see.
were a Game Pass champion all this time,
Yeah.
you are about to get your medals and your belts.
Yeah, you cannot complain about like the lack of offerings around this time this year. Oh my gosh. Let's see, in the
It's
trailer.
insane. It's insane. Like other than Q3 2025, assuming that Outer Worlds 2 hits in Q4, like they pretty much got every quarter covered with a first party exclusive.
Yeah. In the trailer, Hazel takes center stage, and we get to see her impressive powers in action, from weaving with magic to conjuring things to overcoming environmental obstacles. She will have a lot of tools at her disposal to conquer any challenge that heads her way. Throughout South of Midnight, Hazel will travel to different regions that are run by magical creatures inspired by Southern Gothic history. She'll need help to heal them by collecting their fragmented memories. Should she hope to emerge victorious? That doesn't really do it enough justice because there is a ton that we got to
Definitely.
see in this. I mean, the gameplay, we got to see a little bit more of the gameplay and the combat. We've seen it in the past, but we really got to see some of the magic and how that affects the gameplay. And what I really enjoyed here was how, you know, something like I was criticizing Marvel Rivals 4 is like you'll have the combat, but you're not really getting the feedback and some of the stuff that you're doing. Like in this, what I was loving was like with the magic, like you're seeing like the enemy like get pushed back. They also have a pull forward, so you're pulling enemies towards you. As you're hitting them, they're reacting to the hits. Like everything was there in the combat as you're fighting multiple enemies. loving the once again, I mean, we've already seen like the settings and whatnot, but just seeing it again with the music and how they said the music in the combat, like especially I believe during boss fights, but they said the music in the combat will pick up as things start to ramp up, and the music was just glorious, like that's playing in there, very, very mood setting and of the region, which I absolutely love. Like this game is so southern, but yet so like not only southern, but like just that bayou like southern. It
Like
just
that
has,
Cajun Southern.
yeah, it's just like it's oozing personality. And what we saw in this is that the combat's going to be right there with like with all of that, because I know that there was like some speculation, not speculation, but some hesitation as far as like let's see this combat really once we really get once we get a more full fleshed out version of the game previewed, we'll really know what the combat and seeing the different magic and what you're going to have at your offering to manipulate the enemies. I was absolutely loving that part of it. Like she looked totally badass and the magic looked great as far as the animations and just seeing more of was it the stop motion style like claymation inspired animation like that just also. Like as when I was talking about with the Expedition 33, it seemed like a lot of games were heading in that direction because people, they see the power of consoles and they just like, let's just make it more and more realistic. Let's make it more realistic. And you see that with like Hellblade and other games, like they just like how realistic can we get these characters to look? And like you forget that, just having a more powerful console, you don't just have to lean into realism. Like you can do so much more with the animations and the textures. And you really see that in a game like this, how they don't necessarily do that, but then they use that to really like make the art design just pop off of the screen. Even when you kind of have this like what like the it's swamp, so you're not getting super vibrant colors, but yet they're that muddy look looks beautiful from this game's perspective, and they really find a way to bring out the beauty of like that region, and the characters have yeah just a ton of like a ton of flair to them. I would say like when you hear them talking and the voice acting, the audio, the anime, like the way they carry themselves, like there's just so much going there from a visual standpoint that just I feel like that's what's going to kind of carry you through this game. Like the gameplay is there, but really I think the charm of the game is going to be the world and the characters. And you just need the gameplay to, to really fill in that point from a gamer standpoint. And it's just, it seems like it has all that going for it. And it's just something that's great, especially for like for this time where we get so many games where if there's a black protagonist, we're questioning it. Like I feel like this game is going to shine above any of that, and that's a welcome situation for us to be in, especially for for Microsoft to bring that to us. What did you think of this game, seeing it once again, but in a greater depth?
Well, when we saw it at the initial gameplay reveal, like most of the elements were there. The world was stunning to look at, the culture was rich and properly represented. The music was awesome and at times informative because the music isn't just an orchestral soundtrack or anything like that. It's actual, it has vocals. And when you're listening to the music, it's telling you more about the world and the bosses and things because they're all tied to Southern folklore. In that nature, the world is designed in a way where it looks like people are, surviving after the impact of a hurricane. So everything is very kind of, decrepit and run down, and there's water all over the place. Some things that I saw that I really liked. First and foremost, I wasn't too impressed with the combat when the game was first revealed. However, in this developer direct, it looks like they put some more work into it because the combat has more weight and impact now. It looks very, very crunchy, very satisfying. And you're fighting multiple enemies, you're pulling off your combos, you're dodging, you're using your magic, I forget what the mechanic is they called it, where once you stun an enemy, then you kind of like pull the evil or the corruption out of them or something like that. And I think that's very cool because then it switches to this like zoomed in angle, and you're watching the animation. It's kind of like a finisher, but she's cleansing the enemies that she's fighting. Other things I noticed that I like, and I really hope that there's more to it when the game finally releases, but it seems like you're going to be able to have different outfits and hairstyles. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Traversal looks awesome. You got wall running, you've got gliding, you're going to be doing a lot of jumping around and navigating the world to get to where you want to go. So you have that element of the gameplay, you have the combat, you have these amazing boss fights where it's highly cinematic and just and animated and just energetic. Like it doesn't, it looks like it's more than just going in and playing a game and like, here's this encounter, let me beat this boss. It's like, oh, this is something. Like it really captures the enormity and the intensity of what these bosses represent. So I'm very excited to get into those. And then there was another element about this game that I liked, and it's kind of slipping my mind right now. But yeah, man, I'm really excited about this, especially you were touching on how the characters, like, they really give you that sense of like the culture and the setting. I like how everyone is depicted because it's authentic without being stereotypical. Like this very easily, like if this was a Borderlands or something, it would have been like a mockery of the South. But this looks like it's a celebration and a proper depiction while still giving you a fantastical experience within this large swampy region. And a dub, I'm all about rain, I'm all about swamps. So this is right up my alley. I see myself getting this day one when it releases on April 8th, which is a couple of weeks before Clair Obscur Expedition 33. That's plenty of time for me to more than likely get through this. So I'm excited, man. This particular one I have high hopes for. I really hope that this one resonates with people because you don't see games like this very often that take such a risk to give you something so different and unique while being pulled off in a well-executed manner. So, yeah, fingers crossed for South of Midnight. I'll be there. I hope more people will be there and we can share ideas and impressions. Like this might be one of those games that just creeps up out of nowhere and impresses. So, I hope we happy few really nails the landing on this one. I always hope developers stick the landing. And then with South of Midnight, with Doom the Dark Ages, as well as and Clair Obscur Expedition 33, what all three of these games have in common is that they have these broad, beautifully designed worlds that just give you such unique flair and such stunning visuals without, like you said, being overly realistic. So I'm very happy that more stylized games are getting shine, and it's starting to look like Xbox is figuring out their individual voice for their first party development. Like these three games together, while looking incredibly distinct from one another, also have a similar level of polish and just visual originality. So, yeah, gamers, like this is Xbox season, man. They're killing it right now. But yeah, you got any more notes here, or should we move on to the last game?
Yeah, let's move on to the last game. Save the best for last.
I mean, maybe not. We'll see how the opinions are. But the last game, which is actually the first game that the show opened up with, was a surprise to me, especially when I went on the internet and saw kind of the aftermath of the show. We finally got a reveal and a deep dive into Ninja Gaiden
4.
4. Yes, Platinum Games coming back. Ryu Hayabusa coming back. Ninja Gaiden is in effect. And it looks kind of cool. It looks kind of cool. I was a big fan of the original Ninja Gaiden. I want to say it was on the original Xbox. It might have been 360, but the original 3D Ninja Gaiden, like, I was never a Ninja Gaiden guy. Finishing that game, I was a Ninja Gaiden guy. And then 2 and 3 came out. They didn't really give me the same kind of feel or hook as the original game did. And now we're looking at 4 in this Xbox Direct. And I gotta say, it kind of recaptures the spirit of the first game in some small way. It definitely has elements of the sequels in it, which is why I'm a little iffy on it. I mean, it looks stunning. The combat is fast and crazy. You're slicing these enemies to ribbons. It looks like the combat encounters have that traditional Ninja Gaiden toughness and just razor-thin margin for error. It looks cool. They didn't show off a lot of weapons. Like, there was a really long sword, a not so long sword. There's a lot of like wall running and wall jumping. You know, they didn't show too much. It was a lot of repeat clips, but based on what I see, I'm definitely interested. I'm really hoping they can capture the spirit of the original, because if they can do that, then Ninja Gaiden will be back in a big way. AMC, how did you feel when you saw Ninja Gaiden 4?
Yeah, I'll be real. Look cool, but I was never interested in the previous Ninja Gaiden games. Like it, to like when it comes to Ninja Gaiden, yeah, it's just it's never it's a franchise that's always looked cool, but yeah, it just never really pulled me in. What I will say that I enjoy about this is that there was a period where I felt like we were getting a lot of fantasy. I'm trying to think of what other genres, but we were getting a
There's
lot
a
of
lot of
fantasy.
sci-fi now.
Yeah, but now we're getting sci-fi, and we're getting swords, we're getting samurais, and now we got a ninja game. So I am happy about that. Like we're getting like some of the stuff that like that I felt like was a little neglected for a period of time. And so I am happy to see more of that. But yeah, this is I've never been into like a Ninja Gaiden games. Like I wasn't into even like Stellar Blade.
I love that game.
Yeah, like it's just like those style of games don't really pull me in. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, this is cool for like the people who are into Ninja Gaiden, who like loved it during that generation, or like when they were coming out, that's now coming back. I almost felt like at this point, like when I saw Ninja Gaiden, I was like, all right, so Xbox, Microsoft checked off that we have to have something from Japan at a presentation, so people don't like revolt and say that we're neglecting a region of the country of the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is
Xbox doesn't
cool.
care about Japanese games.
Yeah, so and they say like everything shown there, that was pretty cool. At the very beginning, it just said everything shown here will be on Game Pass. So if you're looking for that style of game, like you now got that coming, and on top of that, you got a shadow drop as well for another game on Game Pass, another Ninja Gaiden game on Game Pass. So I think this is definitely, I will say from this standpoint, they seem to be hitting a lot of the I would say combat, like is what like when I look at this like presentation, they're scratching that itch from a gameplay standpoint, because you see Ninja Gaiden just slicing up dudes, gruesome, just comboing them up in the air and jumping around. You got Doom, the Dark Ages, first person, shooting up people, visceral, like death animations, cutting up people. Then you look at South of Midnight, that combat looked great, magic, third person combat. And then you jump over Expedition 3033, Expedition 33, and you have, I guess, like real-time turn-based, reactive turn-based combat, like its own special. Like I was just looking at all these games and I was just like, all these games are different, but yet they all share the one thing they share in common is just really dope gameplay. And so it just seems like from a gamer standpoint, this is exactly everything that people would want, as far as a first party offering from a first party, or at least like Game Pass offering
Yeah.
from Microsoft. And so yeah, it's they're hitting so many places that like yeah, it's if you're looking at something to look forward to, like you're trying to showcase Game Pass and what is available on their library at the Lolo, then you got a ton of bangers to play this year. And it's not just, oh, great stories. Like you have a ton of great games to play on top of really good stories. And so that's what I'll say about Ninja Gaiden. Look cool. Not a game that I'd get into. Well, hey, maybe the reviews come out and I change my mind. But yeah, I just thought it was just another game on top of everything else to really just like bolster the offering that Microsoft has to offer. Do you have anything else to
Well,
say about Ninja Gaiden,
we got some people who
Adub?
ain't changing their minds. They already made their minds up. They know what it is, and they know they don't like it. We got troll of the week, troll of the
Joe
week,
of the week,
troll of the
Joe of the
week,
week,
troll of the
Joe of the
week,
week,
troll of the
Joe of the
week, week,
week,
week, week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
going
week,
third
week.
party, going
Going
third
third
party,
party,
going third
become a
party.
publisher, no more consoles. So for some odd reason, these trolls are coming sideways at the Xbox Direct. Let's figure out what's got them so upset. First troll says, Xbox just needs to give up. Their games look so whack. Only game here that looks okay is Doom, and I still don't want it. Honestly, not interested in any of these titles. Nintendo and Sony are just crushing the gaming world and dropping pure fire. Let's just get one thing straight here. This Xbox Direct with these four games, with Ninja Gaiden coming in fall 2025, accordingly, these four games would have been a whole year that someone would have been looking forward to, where it's like, okay, I'm gonna get this, I'm gonna get this, I'm gonna get this, and I'm gonna get this. That would have been a whole year. That's just what they showed off now. And they got at least two other games bookending that. And we might even see Fable slip in somewhere. So, like I said earlier, this is Xbox season. What are you talking? The games look whack. These are some of the best looking games that have been shown off like ever. So, I don't know what's going on in your world. I would love to see what games you think look better than any of these three or four, let alone all of them combined. In the same year. Get off of it. Next troll says, welfare pass and acquisitions, the two things that sealed Xbox's fate. They'll now be third-party publisher for PlayStation, and Xbox consoles will no longer exist. Dead box is dead.
Dead box is dead.
Dead box is dead. I mean, you could have said this at any time before the direct, and you might have had a leg to stand on, a little scrawny leg with a skinny calf, but it would have been a leg. Not after this direct. Welfare pass, get out of here with that. Game Pass subscribers are the biggest winners of 2025 so far, with some of the biggest games slated to hit their service day one, and they can just go and play it. I'm on PlayStation. I have an Xbox. I'm not going to get Game Pass. It's just a personal choice. But I'm going to have to buy all these. Not even all. I'm probably not going to get Ninja Gaiden, but South of Midnight, getting it. Doom Dark Ages, getting it.
Getting it.
Expedition 33, getting it.
Getting it.
I don't know. I can't say anything about Xbox consoles and what may be held in the future for them, but insofar as Xbox games and publishing, they're killing it. Please give them their flowers. Next troll says, all Xbox fans get for their brand loyalty is any good games they make are going straight to PS5 and play even better on the pro. Sad state of affairs for the Xbox cult.
Cult.
Cult. Okay, so Doom Dark Ages and Expedition 33, those are multi-platform. However, South of Midnight, that is an exclusive. Avowed, that is an exclusive. Outer Worlds 2, third party. But Xbox players, they're getting all of them. You know what PlayStation players are getting? Some of them. and it hurts a little inside. But you know what? I'm happy for those who get to experience all this goodness and do it on Game Pass. So, you know, the service is really starting to show its worth. The acquisitions are really starting to pay off. Like back when these acquisitions were being made, like I'm not going to put words in your mouth, AMC, but personally, I was of the opinion that, you know, it's going to take a couple years for these acquisitions to really begin to bear fruit because most of those developers were purchased while they still had games in development. They still had to get their stuff out. And then everything was going to be so different and so uniquely those developers that it wasn't going to have that unified Microsoft voice that they didn't find yet. And I told people to mark my words. I made my prediction. It's like when Xbox figures out like that first party like layer of visual presentation and quality in the same way that PlayStation figured theirs out with their first party offerings. Like this stable of studios is absolutely monstrous. This lineup is out of control. What are you guys on? Because I don't want to get it. I don't want to catch whatever has infected the people who can't appreciate what Microsoft is bringing to the table in 2025 alone. Next troll says, kind of disappointed looking at this. Hope they all end up great, but was hoping for something more substantive. Deep dive into Doom Dark Ages. Deep dive into South of Midnight. Deep dive into Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Reveal of Ninja Gaiden 4. How much more substance do you need, my good man or woman, whoever you are, whatever you are? What else could they possibly do? What is more substantive? Feel free to write in controlissuespod@gmail.com. Let us know where you think Microsoft could have improved on that A-plus showing that they just had. Next troll says, I can't believe Xbox is still trying. Oh, Xbox ain't trying, baby boy. Xbox is doing. Next troll, not a bad PS5 Pro showcase. Luckily, the stench of flop of midnight won't be one of the games. So you're glad that South of Midnight won't be on PlayStation? That's kind of weird because, mark my words, April will not be the last time you hear about that game. That game's coming up, whether it's going to be nominated for art direction, whether it's going to be nominated for some score, best music. There's going to be some standout element of this game that catapults it back into the public eye when we revisit these titles at the end of the year for the trolleys. Last troll says, South of Flop Night. People seem to be focusing on South of Midnight for some reason. Interesting that it's probably the only exclusive in the bunch. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I think people are underestimating what We Happy Few are bringing to the table. South of Midnight looks like it is going to be a banger. I'm going to be there, so I'll tell you.
All
Had
right.
some technical difficulties. The trolls couldn't take it. They hit us with the DDoS attack. But yeah, in regards to South of Flop Night, mark my words, we will be talking about that game again at the end of the year. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, just in summary, all you guys are on some bullshit. Xbox A-plus showing. You guys should be celebrating instead of hating. AMC, you got anything for these trolls?
I mean, yeah, as you said, they should be celebrating instead of hating. If, the big takeaway from this is that these games will be on PlayStation and Nintendo one day, that's a good thing. Because now there's incentive for everybody, not only to, there's incentive for everybody to watch and root for these Xbox Directs. And because even from a console war standpoint, you could be like, well, I want PlayStation to win. But if these games are coming to X are coming to PlayStation, wouldn't you want them to be good games? So ultimately, and all we ever heard from people is that like, we want games to be everywhere. We want everybody to be able to play games wherever they want to play video games. And so
Yeah,
we're,
exclusives are stupid.
yeah, we're heading towards that future, and people are just like looking for an opportunity to just clown on somebody's purchasing choice where they decide to play video games, their choice of playing video games. So yeah, like that's there's it's one of those things. It's like people can look at a state of play who have any other console and be like, ah, screw this if it's only first party games. But now, and same thing with Nintendo, they look at a Direct, and if it's only first party games and you only own a PlayStation or Xbox, you can be like, ah, screw this. But with Microsoft now, there's incentive for everybody to not only watch these, but to also hope that there are going to be good games displayed there because those games are likely coming to other places that you play video games. So yeah, it's this is all console war-y nonsense, but I'll take this over what we were getting a lot of last year. I'm not seeing a lot of South of Midnight representation trolls out there and things like that. Like it's the focus is on the hardware and on the platform and shitting on that, and that's totally fine by me because we're getting great games and that's the only thing that I care about, A-Dub.
Consoles aside, with Microsoft sharing the wealth, so to speak, it's great, and it helps to ensure that they can continue to bring us highly polished, high quality content for years and years into the future, regardless of whatever may happen or not happen to the console. So again, rejoice. So troll of the week,
Week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of
week,
the week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the week, week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week, week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week,
week.
week.
So AMC, how are you doing on time?
I can we can quick hit some topics and then we'll call it a day.
Indeed. You got anything?
Yeah, I got Circana. We'll run through this because there's a lot of notes, but this and it's the entire year, so I'll run through these. I'm gonna skip over December and just go right to the best-selling games of 2024. So the best-selling game of 2024, A-Dub, in the United States, Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Number two behind that, EA Sports College Football 25. Number three, a non-first party game that Sony can't take credit for, Helldivers 2. Number four, Dragon Ball Sparking Zero.
All right.
Five, NBA 2K25. Six, Madden NFL 25. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. EA Sports FC 25. Elden Ring and EA Sports MVP Bundle. Some details here. Call of Duty Black Ops 6 finished as both the best-selling premium video game of December and 2024 year. Call of Duty was the best-selling video game franchise in U.S. full game dollar sales, excluding add-on content, for a record 16th year. Call of Duty always selling. EA Sports College Football 25, while ranking first, will finish as second best-selling game on 2024, while ranking first on Xbox platforms. EA Sports College Football 25 is the best-selling sports video game in U.S. history. So it looks like when people were buying college football, they were also getting Xboxes along with it. Or, yeah. Let's see. For the year 2024, Xbox Series ranked second in hardware spending, while Switch placed second in unit sales. PlayStation led 2024 in unit and dollar sales. PlayStation 5, I should say. PlayStation 5 now ranks third in lifetime hardware dollar sales in U.S. history, trailing only the Switch and Xbox 360. The platform ranks 11th in lifetime unit sales. So that's work to do in units, but money, they making that shit up. And let's see. PlayStation Portal was the best-selling accessory in consumer spending during both December and 2024 for the year. The PS5 DualSense wireless controller, Midnight Black, led both time periods in accessory unit sales, and will end with software content spending. So this is interesting. So video game content spending during 2024 increased by 2% at $50.6 billion. This is the second highest total of video game content spending in US history, trailing only 2021's $52 billion. And the notable thing here is, so there was a 2% increase in content spending, but for 2024, content spending growth across mobile, non-mobile subscription, and the PC, cloud, and non-console VR segments offset an 11% dip in spending in video game content for console platforms. So basically, there was an increase in spending from mobile, PC, and subscription services that offset a drop in console spending as far as video games. So, I mean, there is something there as far as when they look at the direction of where people are spending their money for video games. We're seeing a lot of that go to other places outside of console. And, you know, maybe that is something that Microsoft is looking at as they see the direction of where people are focusing a lot of their time. But yeah, we shall see moving forward. But yeah. Some pretty interesting stuff here. A-Dub, do you have any other quick hits?
Well, before I get into my quick hit, I gotta eat a
Yeah.
little crow. I'm sure I ate some, but there's still to be some on the plate. I made the bold statement that I don't see a Dragon Ball game outselling Metaphor ReFantazio, but here we are. So, yeah, I'll take a little egg on my face about that one, and then I'll move on to the next quick hit. Analysts are saying that GTA 6, if they decided to charge $100 for it, would benefit the industry. Specifically, they're saying that if Grand Theft Auto hits the market at $100, then that would give other developers and publishers permission, basically, to then charge more for their games. Personally, I think that would be a death sentence for any developer other than Rockstar. Like, Rockstar can get away with charging $100 for GTA 6 because Rockstar gives you a game that is worth that price. They give you something that is robust, that is full, that is dynamic, that is unlike anything else on the market. It is always the standard bearer for open world games. It always sets a new bar, whether it's Red Dead, whether it's GTA. Nothing else ever tops those games except newer versions of those games. Now, if you're trying to tell me that GTA being $100 is going to provide room for Ubisoft to charge $100 or just, you know, 80, 90 bucks for Assassin's Creed, you're basically handing that company over to Tencent with a bright pink bow on it. This is not the way. Like, let's just calm it down with all the charging extra money for things. Like, we got a odd little balance going on with microtransactions and battle passes and things going on. And, you know, as much as consumers like to complain about those things, they seem to have established a firm foothold in the gaming ecosystem at this point in time. So I think the better move is just to let things simmer down and settle because we're talking about a gaming community that got upset about a $10 price hike, and they're still struggling to digest that. We got upset, or we got a gaming community that got upset when Sony pulled the free upgrade for Horizon Forbidden West and wanted to charge $10 for it, and that was a big uproar. I mean, we have a gaming community that gets upset because of the mere existence of stores within games that sell skins and such that they don't agree with the prices for, even though they're completely optional and you don't have to buy them. Now is not the time to be talking about raising game prices again after we already just had a price increase, not but a few years ago. AMC, with your financial expertise, what do you make of this speculation by the analyst sector?
I don't know. I don't know if it would fix things. I think if people are looking to raise their prices, they're going to raise their prices. They don't need GTA to lead the way. But yeah, I don't know. That's it's that there's so much speculation there that I can't say whether or not that would be true. It would I feel like I feel like if anything, what we've learned is that game development has gone. I forgot what it was. I think it was Microsoft. Somebody, there's some publisher that was, I guess, like, I don't know if they're under trial or being investigated, and they had to release their development costs. And they're just showing like how much the development costs were for, maybe it was Activision, and they're showing the de development costs of Call of Duty, and it was just like so ridiculously high, and which means they need to make that much more back. But yeah, I don't think, yeah, was it charging $100 for GTA is gonna fix things? I don't think that's gonna fix things.
Yeah, it's not gonna open the door to a brighter future. It's gonna close the door to stability, in my personal opinion.
And as I was just saying, from a content spending standpoint, they just showed that people are spending less on software with consoles. So raising the price, I don't think is gonna fix things. It's just, trying to get people's money back on console, I guess, is what really needs to happen. People need to spend more money on video games. Everybody's talking about like just waiting for a price drop or other nefarious means we're constantly
Waiting for
seeing.
it to be on Xbox, waiting for it to be on Game Pass, waiting for it to be a PS Plus offering.
Yeah, and you even see like Nintendo, like there's articles always popping up with Nintendo shutting down this emulator or this thing that's trying to get games on there. So it's a lot of that stuff that's going to get the money back in the industry as opposed to just raising the prices necessarily. And yeah, I Take-Two is totally fine. They don't The thing is, Take-Two would only do this if they needed to do this, and they
Yeah.
don't need to do this. That's the whole point, is they don't need to do this. People are still buying GTA 5, and
Yeah.
there's still money,
Like it
still
came out this year.
yeah, and they're still spending money on GTA Online. Like that's kind of the whole point, is you make your money through all these other ways so you don't have to raise the game price. And so yeah, there would be no need for them to do that. And I don't think Take-Two's like thinking we need to do something to save the industry. They're totally fine. Like if
Yeah.
anything, it's just other mediocre developers may get pushed aside due to consolidation as opposed to anything. So yeah, I don't know. I can't take this too seriously at all.
Take-Two's probably looking at this like that's a you problem, industry. That's not an us
Yeah.
problem. I mean, don't get me wrong, gaming is a luxury hobby. You don't need to game, you don't need to play every game, and you have to pay to play, ideally. I mean, there are many avenues where you don't, but that can cause more harm than good if it gets a little too excessive. However, the solution isn't to get more money from people. The solution is to cut your costs, make smaller games, make more tighter focus experiences. Like, let's scale back on the realism and get more into stylized visuals and things of that nature. Stuff that doesn't take, the better part of a decade to develop with a team of over 1,000 people, unless you are a rock star where you can do that. Like, I think the wake-up call that we need for the industry is that certain developers and publishers need to stay in their lane. Like, the pursuit of infinite growth is just going to lead to your downfall. It's going to lead to layoffs. It's going to lead to cancellations. It's going to lead to studio closures. Rein in the budgets. Make smaller games, make better games, make things that people actually want to go out and spend money on, make things that people feel like they can't miss. Where, like, I can't say where because they're everywhere, but like, we have all these must-have titles, and there's more games than ever, so there's just fewer consumer dollars to go around to keep all these companies in business unless these companies scale back and meet us in the middle where we can have the disposable income to support more games, support more franchises, support more studios, instead of trying to gouge people. Like, just raising the prices is going to get us in this corner where people just buy less games overall. Like, if games go to $100, I'm sure there are tons of people who are like, all right, I'm buying two games this year. And that's it. And I'm going to just keep digging on my backlog until these prices come down. So, read the room. That's all I gotta say about that is just read the room, fix what's going on in your house before you ask me to borrow my ladder. I don't know a better way to put it, but the industry needs to get it together and get more money out of consumers isn't the answer.
You have any other quick hits, A-Dub?
Nah, that's everything I got, man. Now I gotta look around, see if I have anything more to add to my wish list, see if I have any more anime to watch, try to check out some more movies, get ready for next week, start taking notes, try to stick to my goal of really putting more time and effort into the Blue Sky account so we can cultivate that audience, get that reach going. So, I'm gonna try to stay busy. How about yourself?
Nothing but for me, A-Dub. Just playing some video games, hanging out with the family. You know how it is. You know how it be.
Yes, I do.
Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. We are Control Issues. Thanks for playing. Sucker!
Sucker!